And like normal on our Sunday mornings, I'd like it to be a class, so if you've got some comments, thoughts, questions you want to add, please do so. I don't know how many of you try to read ahead and make that part of your morning reading, but hopefully you have. If you do, it kind of made me think about when you read this chapter and you read what's kind of going on before, you know, Michael Mishra and taking us through that, and some thoughts there, but you almost think Paul's lost his mind maybe in this one. He even refers to himself as a madman, which is kind of interesting. So this is an interesting chapter. There's some things that I think we would maybe say is not a typical way to maybe approach things, but we know that Paul did some things at times that were non-typical, and I think it's a good lesson for us. So when we go through this, I just pulled out what I thought were three maybe key points for us to think about, and that is to understand why Paul felt it necessary to engage in, and he calls it foolish boasting, and to see how one might be misled by false prophets and deceitful workers. I think that's a huge piece of what we need to get here. And then the third thing was to appreciate the great amount of suffering Paul endured as a minister of Christ. We know it, we've read it, but you know, part of his way of making an argument, if you will, during this chapter, he really calls that out. So then I went from those three things, and once I summarize this, then we're going to get into it. But I said, as Paul continues defending his apostolic authority, he finds it necessary to engage in a little foolishness, and he calls it that. He does so out of concern for their faithfulness to Christ and his fear others may have corrupted their minds. So I think that's important. I also said he finds himself having to explain why he did not accept support from them. I think this is a really important part of this chapter. Why? Because that was a big deal for them. Paul, who had good reasons for not accepting their support, recognizes these detractors. I don't know if in the business world, I bet Ben does surveys at work, and we have what we call net promoters now, and we have detractors. So if you're not someone that's promoting your business or saying good things about it, you have what's called detractors. And these people were detractors. There's no doubt about it. They were detractors for Paul, for what he was teaching and what he's doing. They recognize these detractors as they really were. He calls them false prophets, false apostles, and deceitful workers. While not desiring to act foolishly, which is an interesting part of this chapter, he finds it necessary since it seems that the Corinthians are so willing to accept others who do the same thing. So we're going to see that, you know, he had some foolish boldness that he encountered in, that he calls it. Paul claims that he was on equal footing with the detractors, which is kind of an interesting argument. So let's just dive right in. We'll get into some of these things, and we want to talk about them. I've got the microphone, so I'm going to do my best to read a little today. I'm going to read from verses 1 through 4. So we're in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 1 through 4. Oh, that you would bear with me a little folly, and indeed you do bear with me. For I am jealous for you with godly jealousy. For I have betrothed you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For if he who comes preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you received a different spirit, which you have not received, or a different gospel, which you have not accepted, you may well put up with it. So let's look at this. I think this is interesting, and I did a lot of my studying in the ESV. I've got an ESV Bible I like to read and study out of, and now I'm in the New King James. So, but whether you've got the NIV, ESV, New King James, you're going to see this foolish boasting, folly for a little bit. But why was he doing what he calls this foolish boasting or this folly? What was the main reason? Because I think that's important. What was the concern?
To compare them with what the false teachers were doing.
That for sure. That was one of the reasons.
And they were thinking they needed to have more than just the simple simplicity that was in the gospel.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's one of my major themes, the simplicity of the gospel, simplicity of Christ. What I was thinking about is the reason he kind of engaged in this way was for their faithfulness. He did it for them. And so I think when you, and we're going to see the differences between what I'm going to call the shysters, or those who are, you know, falsely teaching, and what he did it for. But he resorts to a little folly because with godly jealousy, and I think that's important, godly jealousy, he seeks to present them as a chaste virgin. Okay? So there was a difference between why he kind of stooped to their level, as I'm putting it. As their father, I think this is interesting. And what verse? But he makes the comment, and we see this in other places. We've seen him talk about this. Will somebody turn to 1 Corinthians? We're going to just look at a couple different chapters here. 1 Corinthians 4 and 15. And then would somebody turn just back a little bit, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 13. Somebody go ahead and read 1 Corinthians 4 and 15 when you get there.
For though you might have 10,000 instructors in Christ, yet you do not have many fathers. For in Christ Jesus I have begotten you through the gospel.
Okay. So here he refers to himself as the father. I think that's important. And I, for some reason, have lost this father comment in the first few verses, but we'll come across it. Somebody read 2 Corinthians 6:13.
Now in return for the same, I speak as to children, you also be open.
Okay. And maybe I was making the reference here to how he felt as a father. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14, it says, now for the third time I'm ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not speak, or do I not seek yours, but you. For the children ought not lay up for their parents, but the parents for the children. So this is that fathering figure, how he felt for them as his children. Yeah, Ben.
Well, I think probably what you were referencing there is in verse 2, how he says, I betrothed you to one husband. All of those are casts of fathers.
Yeah.
The father gave the daughter away.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to get into that. And you were just headed there, but so we see and know that you know Paul sees and feels the same jealousy as a father feels towards his daughter. That Jewish culture, you know, what was the duty of the father when he presented his daughter? How was he supposed to present her?
Chaste.
Yeah, chaste, as chaste. So one husband. And why this comparison to a virgin? Why would this have been important for them and us? How can we make a comparison
for our
here?
Pure church.
Okay, for our pure love to serve Him, only Him. Yeah. Anybody else have any comments about that? I think just even being focused on Him, you know, just have a single focus on Him, you know, versus it's very easy to be distracted. He's really wanting them to hone in on. Him and only them, which is why he makes that point. Because they seem very willing to receive others, and I think he makes a comment here that's interesting, with a different Jesus, a different spirit, a different gospel. He fears that their minds are going to be corrupted. So when you think about that, that's why he went into that. You know, he's very focused on that, even to the point of, at the time of Eve's fall in the garden. Well, what happened to Eve? Well, she succumbed to someone that was very cunning, you know. And Paul's representing these, and I call them opponents, but who are doing all they can do to deceive. They're doing everything. They're pulling out all stops to make sure that they will deceive, and they're doing that through this different Jesus, different faith, different spirit, different everything. Yeah, Mike.
Well, and he was right in being concerned because they already had.
That's right.
These problems in the past, you know, some of them said, "Well, I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos."
Right.
The gospel I know is better than the gospel you know, and so on and so forth. So he was really concerned about all those things.
Yeah, and my very next question was going to be, what would this different Jesus or different spirit or different gospel be? And Mike, you kind of alluded to it. If you think about today, do we have to be concerned with a different Jesus, a different spirit, a different gospel? Or is that just for them, Paul?
Absolutely. I think that has been Satan's plan since day one.
It has.
You know, you told him, oh, he didn't. He told you that for another reason. Really, you'll be okay if you eat this fruit. He told Jesus when he tempted him, kind of the same thing, and he still does it today. And I think his number one thing is to try and pervert the gospel,
twist it,
get other followers.
Sure.
He appears to be holy, but he's not.
So I'm thinking of a commercial that we're seeing a lot right now on our public television. Someone that says, all you have, and he's got a really good, nice, gentle voice, very convincing. All you have to do is ask Jesus into your heart. You notice how simple that sounds and how easy that would be to just accept fully and wholly. And you, if you think about that, wholly, I mean W-H-O-L. But if you think about that, it's happening today. Like you said, it happened with Eve, and it's been happening the whole time ever since. Yeah, back here.
This reminds me of the importance of circumstantial preaching. Paul had to address this with the Galatians because they were in the Grecian area. And we see when he first came to Athens, his address to the people there, and they were debaters. They liked this. So you had the Apollos and the Paul and the Cephas problem. And then when you have these other people who sound smart and all of that, and they come in, this is a legitimate problem because of the area and the people he's dealing with. He's dealing with the direct problem. So I think it's important to keep in mind the background of what people are dealing with or susceptible. That past is important in the present.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The Galatians had the same.
Oh, sure.
The first chapter,
So
he was so surprised they were removed from the gospel.
That's right.
He just preached to them.
Yeah.
To another gospel.
Yeah. Yep. That cunning craftiness is good, and it happened then. It's happening now. Okay. Let's read. I see time's going to get away from us quickly. Someone read for me 5-15, if you would.
Or I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles, even though I am untrained in speech, yet I am not in knowledge. But we have been thoroughly manifested among you in all things. Did I commit sin in humbling myself that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to minister to you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was burdensome to no one. For what I lacked, the brethren who came from Macedonia supplied. And in everything I kept myself from being burdensome to you, and so I will keep myself. As the truth of Christ is in me, no one shall stop me from this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows. But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their work.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Yeah, so, you know, he has this comparison that he kind of engages in with these false prophets. You know, he says, well, I may be untrained in speech, but that's not the case with his knowledge, and we know that. You know, Paul demonstrated that he was not inferior, as he calls out these most eminent apostles, and he refused to accept support from them. Why do you think, there's a few reasons, but why do you think it was so important he refused support? Well, let's ask this. Could he have accepted support?
Sure.
Absolutely. Okay. So why was it so important? I think there's a couple reasons, but why do you think it was so important that at this time, in this moment, he refused it?
I think he absolutely wanted to make it clear. I'm not teaching you the gospel because I want to make money like these other people are doing. I'm here because I love you, and I want to see you be in heaven with me.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's definitely reason number one. He wanted to separate himself to showing them, I'm not like the others. Yeah, Malachi.
Well, it's kind of back to circumstances. Corinth was the third richest city in the kingdom of Rome. It made its money in commerce. It was a trading city. It was a city vastly built up by merchants. And so they looked at the world through the eye of business. And so if he came in here and he was accepting, they would think he was just another businessman and he was just selling a product. Yet he wanted to make it important to them, show them that this is much more than a product. That I'm not in this for the money. And it probably goes back to the circumstances of who they were.
Yeah. And when you think about the upper class here, do you think they thought he was crazy? So part of the issue was that, so it's kind of interesting. If you're taking the money, then that's going to be a problem. He's going to look like a businessman doing what everybody else is doing. But by not taking money, these upperclassmen thought, this is, you're crazy. So it's funny, he loses both ways because they're going to belittle and make fun. But, you know, if we look at, somebody was in 1 Corinthians, will somebody turn back there and look at 1 Corinthians 4:11-13? And then I'm going to turn back in 2 Corinthians 6 and 5. 4 and 5 says, "But in all things we commend ourselves as ministers of God in such patience and tribulations and needs and distresses, in stripes and imprisonments, in tumults and labors, in sleepness and fastings." My point with going back to this is, do you think he caused himself a little bit of grief in not taking money? Yeah, there were tough times upon him. Somebody have that 1 Corinthians 4:11-13.
"Even to the present hour, we both hunger and thirst, and we are poorly clothed and beaten and homeless. And we labor, working with our own hands. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we endure it. Being defamed, we entreat. We have been made as the filth of the world, the off-scouring of all things until now."
Okay. My point in going back and looking at some of this is just to remind us, by not taking some of their funding, and I know there was different scenarios, but it was not only physically taxing on them. Now, granted, he did receive money and funding from other congregations and or from other churches, and we see that in verses 7-9. And but he didn't want to be burdensome to them. So I think there's 3 or 4 reasons here. He didn't want to be burdensome to them. He really wanted to separate himself from the others who were doing this very thing. Yeah, Ben.
I just think there's a lesson here for us, too. If you've ever talked with someone who is a supporter of a paid preacher system, mm-hmm. oftentimes they'll reference that, you know, Paul stayed in Ephesus for 3 years, or, you know, in this case, Paul was in Corinth for a year and a half. And then that's justification for
sure.
Just a single person. And that person being paid by the congregation. I think this is an interesting point to look at, that the only time the finances are highlighted in reference to Paul staying in one place for a long time, it is that I didn't take any money from you.
Right.
And while it's not explicitly implied here, we know that you have a loyalty to some degree to the person who pays you.
Sure.
Right? You know, all of us have had jobs,
mm-hmm.
and probably have done things for our employers that we would rather not do. Maybe not speak on an issue that you know, I mean, I just speak for myself, that, you know, there's times that I would like to speak up against things, and I just choose not to because I don't want to have the risk associated with being associated with my job.
Oh.
Some of the, as an example, you know,
sure.
during the pandemic, some of the things that the hospital did and during the pandemic, maybe I didn't agree with those things, but I also know that I'm not going to speak up about them because they pay my wages. There's that risk with a preacher being paid. And Paul here, it seems like he's getting it that way.
Yeah, doesn't want to mix that.
I didn't take money from you, and there's lots of reasons, and that could have been one of them. Anyway, I just think it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to preach the gospel unfurled here. There's not going to be a pay or a swaying or, yeah. That's a good point as well.
When you are paid, then you tend to soften your messages to
cater
the ears of those who are paid.
Sure.
And that's what we see in many of the so-called churches of Christ today, you know. I'll just say what's pleasing to your ears. I know I'll always have a job. We've got more people coming in. We've got more money coming in. Everything's just
yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah.
But you don't hear the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. All great points. So I think there's a lot here for us, and I hope that we got them all. But I, you know, he talks about not robbing other congregations. He did receive support from them. He talks about receiving support from Macedonia, which would have included Philippi, like Thessalonica, Berea. Those might have been some of the areas that he would have received support from, and completely fine. And he could have received. I think even if it was written in a way that he did receive support from them, it would have been okay. But we see that he had calculated and thought about the benefits far outweighed receiving their money. And I like that, and I think it's important for us to call out.
And that's to the credit of those Macedonian churches, because they were willing to put out their money and
yes.
not really get the...
Right, not receiving, that's right.
That he's preaching to someone else.
So. Yeah. I wanted to make the comment back in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 17. He says, "For we are not as so many peddling the word of God." I like how he says this, peddling the word of God, "but as of sincerity, but as from God, we speak in the sight of God in our Christ." So really tries to make the point, and I like that verse. I'm not going to be like the others who are just out there peddling for financial gain, and they're not. He doesn't say this, but this is what he's implying. They're not doing it out of sincerity. They're not doing it out of love, which is what I'm doing. I really care about you all. Please listen. I'm trying to keep you from falling like Eve and others for all this other stuff. So it's because he loves them. And
Clayton.
Yeah.
Just one quick thought
sure.
here. Kind of along these lines, a little off track. But
yeah.
I think one of the true tests for people, men who claim to be evangelists, preachers, etc., is how the words they say and the way they conduct a funeral service of someone who obviously has not lived a Christian
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
And when they say everything's good, blah, blah, blah,
yeah, yeah.
that just turns my stomach.
Yeah. Tells you a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. And we've been to those.
They don't have to say something bad.
Sure.
When you try to, you know, we hear the phrase, preach them into heaven.
Yeah.
You know, when obviously everybody knows they didn't live the way God wanted them to.
Yeah.
You know, we don't pronounce the judgment, but we observe the life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, and looking at 13 through 15, you know, he says, as deceitful workers, they transform themselves into apostles of Christ. In 2 Peter, let me just turn here real quick. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, it says, "But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you." Do we have that today? Did we have it then? Yes. "Who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who brought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber." Great three verses that go along kind of with his comments here on verses 13 through 15. So, you know, it's interesting. Satan has been able to transform himself into, and he calls it here, the angel of light. What better way to tell you he is unbelievably good at being deceitful? He transforms himself into the angel of light. He uses similar tactics here. He uses similar tactics today. And he used them back then. And we just have to be very careful. But that's, you know, verse 14 and 15. Here he says, "And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into the angel of light. Therefore, it's no great thing if he ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works." So that's why I turned in 2 Peter. He tells them, your way is going to be in destruction. And he's really trying to remind them here that it's easy to be deceived. They will transform themselves just like Satan will. So
he said back in the second chapter, he said, "For we are not ignorant of his devices."
That's right. Yeah, he calls it straight away, straight out what it was. He had some very cunning devices, and many have fallen for it. You know, I can't remember. Does he call them super apostles?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the new, yeah. So he says, he's using sarcasm, obviously, super apostles who were troubling the Corinthian church by preaching, you know, like they did. Paul may not have been a skilled, we've talked about this over and over and over, he may not have been a skilled speaker, but his knowledge of the gospel was great and surpassed many. We can, and we're going to run out of time, but we can read in Philippians about that. Let's see here. I had so many verses that went along with this I thought were really good, but we're going to have to probably skip them. Does anybody have any other comments about 13 through 15?
1 Timothy 4 and 1. Now the Spirit especially says, in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron.
That's one of nine verses that I had listed. That's perfect for, you know, he makes it very clear, these servants who are doing this and making themselves acting like, look like Satan did, their end will be destruction. And there's so many good verses that call that out. So, okay, let's just read. I've got the mic. Let me try this. 16 through 21. I say again, let no one think of me as a fool. If otherwise, at least receive me as a fool, that I also may boast a little. This is them boasting, and he kind of, like I called it, stooping to their level. What I speak not according to the Lord, but as it were foolishly in the confidence of boasting. Seeing that many boast according to the flesh, I will also boast. For you put up with fools gladly, since you yourselves are wise. And I want to just pause for a second. We are going to run out of time. You know, is this typically maybe the best way to have a discussion? You know, I've said it, and maybe this is the wrong way to say it, but stooping to their level, he kind of, and I feel like, and maybe you have a better way of describing this, but because this was working with the others, because this is how they were being deceived, these people talking about all the things they had done, I think he, for a moment, he kind of reminds them, for a moment, I'm going to talk foolishly, but do you have a better way of saying what he kind of did? I say stoop to their level, but I don't know if any of you have thought about these passages, because it's a little bit, I don't know, it's confusing, but you might think, well, maybe that wasn't the best way. But it was, for Paul saw that it was. Verse 20 says, for you put up with it, if one brings you into bondage, if one devours you, if one takes you, if one exalts himself, if one strikes you on the face. To our shame, I say we were too weak for that. But in whatever anyone is bold, I speak foolishly. I am bold also. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. So he tells them, listen, all these things, I am the same, right? Are they ministers of Christ? Well, I speak as a fool. I am more in labors and more abundant in stripes, above measures in prisons, more frequently in deaths often. From the Jews, five times, I received 40 stripes minus one. Three times, I was beaten with rods. Once, I was stoned. Three times, I was shipwrecked. A day and a night and a day, I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils in water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, perils of the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among the false brethren. I'm going to pause there. So he wants to make sure. He's like, I mean, you think about this list. Is anybody gone through anything even close to that? Not in our day. Well, I need to be careful. Probably sitting amongst us, nobody. Had anybody at that time gone through that? Maybe some had experienced some of that, but not to the detail that he had gone through. So, you know, and I want to maybe key in on this. I think the difference between some of what they were boasting about, these false teachers, when you think about all these things that Paul went through, how was Paul able to do that? Was it Paul's like some super guy? He was super strong and man, he was just the toughest guy anybody knew. Well, he probably was tough, but who helped him to be tough?
Of course, God was tough.
God.
But he was a strong, he had a strong,
sure he was.
He had a strong personality.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he would stand up.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the reason God chose him. One of the reasons.
Yeah, his character.
To go
yeah.
to the Gentiles because he knew he had such strong willpower and drive.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt that that is his character. That's who he was. And I think that's exactly why he's chosen. But when Paul's kind of semi-bragging about these things, what's he really bragging about?
He's really bragging about God.
That's right. It's about God and what God was able.
Not,
and it's
not himself.
Not of himself. And I think that's the difference is we saw a lot of this foolishness, or he calls it out, that these others were saying and doing, oh, I did this. And he says, whoa, whoa, whoa. I was of all these things too. And look at all these things. And again, it wasn't about what I'm capable as an individual doing, it's what God enabled and helped me to do. I think that's the key difference.
Usually when you have this well-known speaker that comes in to a group,
yeah.
they have this long accolade, this and that and stuff.
Yeah.
I've got a note here in my Bible, it's probably some evangelist that used this. It says, at judgment, will God be looking for medals, awards, certificates of accomplishments?
Uh-huh.
Or will he be looking to see how many scars you bear, and most soldiers bear scars from being engaged in battles.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty good thought.
Yeah, if we go back just even in chapter 10, verse 17, 18, he says, but he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. Okay, that was the difference. He was glorying in the Lord. Verse 18, for not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. Well, did the Lord commend Paul? Of course. Was he chosen? Yes. And again, it wasn't him talking about all these great things I have done. It feels that way when you're reading it, and that's why I want to make sure a caution us to that, not that we don't get it, but he was really glorying in God. Okay.
He also said that he would glory in his infirmities.
Yeah, there you go. So, and I had that. That's good, Eddie. He was glorying in, you said infirmities? Yeah, exactly. So, the things that Paul had as a struggle, his own problems, which seems weird. Have you ever bragged about the things you're terrible at? I mean, really, think about that for a second. Oh, I'm so bad at this. But he calls out, I'm not as eloquent as you. I'm not a great speaker, but these are the things I have. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, I think it was more the contrast of people that say, I'm successful because I'm rich.
Sure.
Look at all I have. Look at where I've gone.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going to brag about what I've suffered.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Okay, let's see here. Verse 22 and 23, let's just go back to that. The grounds for his foolish boasting. Oh, yeah, so I think we've said all we want to say there. But, you know, he calls out, and I think it's really important. He gives a little history lesson just to remind them in case they needed it, you know, of Hebrews, Israelites, seed of Abraham, ministers of Christ. And he goes through and says, hey, I'm all of those things. So, like his opponents, he was those things and, of course, more. Any comments about 22 or 23?
Well, he was fulfilling what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount.
Good point.
5, verse 10 and 11, mm-hmm. where he talked about, blessed are those who persecute for righteousness' sake. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you, say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake, and so forth. So, you know, Paul was blessed in that he knew,
yeah.
even though he suffered all these hardships, that really was, in a way, it was God's way of telling him, you're faithful.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, which is interesting, isn't it? Good point there. Okay, good. And I'm just looking through my notes. I had skipped through so much to make sure. But, you know, it's easy for us to just read through some of those things. But I think we talked about, and Mike called it out, but God chose all for reasons. And when you think about what he truly was able to endure, you know, you go back to that list there of his suffering, you know, and he suffered for the cause of Christ, as a minister of Christ. And you get into that verse, you know, 24. 5 times was beaten, 39 times. 3 times beaten with rods. Once stoned, verse 25. 3 times shipwrecked. You know, I think some of us, sometimes we have a bad day or a rough stretch or, you know, we have a couple of things that happen to us. We're like, man, it's just been terrible lately. And you look at this list of things and you think about over the course of how long these things took, you would start to feel like a lot of things are stacked against you, wouldn't you? All these things that happened, day and night in the deep, miscellaneous perils on many different journeys, verse 26, miscellaneous discomforts, you know, what's he say, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness often. You know, I know some here struggle with, they can't sleep. Well, that's a rough thing. You know, that's not easy. And if you're one of those people, you get it. But, you know, imagine the stress of his body, the taxing that this man went through. And then you've got people that are wanting to kill you and do all these other things. But he was hungry. He was thirsty. I don't know, you know, outside of you've been working all day and you're hungry, but how many of us were truly hungry? Have gone days with no food, maybe no water. And he did this. This was something he did. Fasted often and in cold and in nakedness. Okay? I mean, this list, if you really just take a moment just to one item at a time and you ask yourself, okay, have I even done one of these things? You know, this is quite a list, and it should cause us to take a step back. But his daily concern was his concern for himself or the condition of the brothers and sisters in the church? And I only ask that because I think that's a question we've got to just continually remind ourselves of. He did this all unselfishly, and he was reminding them of it. But if we've got to be reminded of the same thing. You know, he did all this for the love of the church. He did this for the love of Christ. And so I would ask you today, as we kind of wrap things up, what am I willing to do for the love of Christ? You know, there's a lot of us here that have different things we really enjoy doing. And, you know, we get to a point and it's like, okay, I'm drawing the line. I'm not willing to go do that. But when it comes to our love for everybody that's sitting right here in front of us, when it comes to our love for congregations outside of Ozark, when it comes for the brothers who are evangelizing, what are we willing to do? You know, what was Paul willing to do? Go to the ends of the world, literally. Literally be beaten for it, you know, and nearly killed. So I think when I think about kind of wrapping this chapter up, and I'll kind of go back to some of the things we started with, but Paul felt it necessary to kind of engage in some of this foolish talk. He felt it necessary to really remind them of everything that he had done, but not because it was to brag on him, but to show his love. And we also have to be reminded that the same false apostles and deceitful workers that were acting then, they're still acting today. They have not gone away. And you know why they haven't gone away? Because Satan's not going to go away until he's put to death that final time. And just to really kind of appreciate Paul, what Paul's gone through, and really what Paul went through for them, but what he's gone through for us. You know, how did he make things better for us? So let me just, in the last minute, any questions, comments, or other ideas that I didn't bring up that when you read this chapter hit home to you? I'm going to ring the bell, and if you've got some, we can take another 30 seconds. Otherwise, take a break, and we'll be back.